Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Kathy Kearns, who's serving as our worship associate, our director of religious education, Karen Lapidus, our music director, Hal Walker, and the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent Choir.
We light this chalice this morning with a question posed by the poet Mary Oliver. Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your wild and precious life?
Our call to worship this morning is an excerpt from a reading called Set in Stone by Victoria Safford. In a cemetery once, I found a strangely soothing epitaph. The name of the deceased and her dates had been scoured away by wind and rain, but there was a carving of a tree with roots and branches, and among them the words, "She attended well and faithfully to a few worthy things." At first, this seemed to me a little meager, a little stingy on the part of her survivors, but I wrote it down and have thought about it since. And now I can't imagine a more proud or satisfying legacy. She attended well and faithfully to a few worthy things. Every day I stand in danger of being struck by lightning and having the obituary in the local paper say, "She attended frantically and ineffectually to a great many unimportant, meaningless details." Want your obituary to read. She balanced her checkbook with precision and never missed a day of work. Missed a lot of sunsets, missed a lot of love, missed a lot of risk, missed a lot, but her money was in order. He gave and forgave sparingly, without radical intention, without passion or conviction. She could not or would not hear the calling of her heart. If you had to name a few worthy things to which you attend well and faithfully, what, I wonder, would they be?
One of my favorite ministries in our congregation is our Worship Associates program. This is something that I started when I first came to the church 7 years ago. And we have ever since then had a team of worship associates that's worked with me not just to lead the services, but also to plan the services. And so I wanted to take a moment this morning to tell you about the wonderful ministry of the people who participate in this program. We meet 3 times a year to actually determine the themes that our services will be about and to have some initial conversation about those themes. And then with each worship associate that's leading a service with me, I meet individually. And if it's a multi-generational service, Karen meets with us as well to actually sort of dive deep into the topic at hand, explore what it's all about. They work on finding readings for the service. They sometimes suggest hymns and often compose an original call to worship or sometimes even a homily. It really enriches our services and provides a greater spectrum of ideas than I can bring all by myself. And so I'm very grateful to the worship associates, and I realized that I wanted to do a better job allowing you to be grateful to our worship associates as well. And so today we'll be recognizing the outgoing worship associates. It's a 3-year term, and every year 3 people rotate off and 3 new people join us. And so today we'll be recognizing the 3 people who are completing their term this month. And that includes Eric Van Bars. Will you come join us, Eric? And Kathy Kearns. Danny Beal is the other person, and she'll be with us at the second service this morning. And so this is a little thank you to you for all of the many gifts you have shared with us and to you. And will you please join me in reading the words to our outgoing worship associates, which are in your order of service. Thank you for sharing your creativity and energy with us. Your gifts of heart and mind, body and soul have enriched our worship services and helped make them meaningful. We're grateful for your leadership. And the 3 new worship associates who will be beginning 3-year terms in October include Sophie Smith, Justin Chakai, and John Murphy. And Justin is at this service. Would you stand, Justin, so everyone can see you? And will you please read the words to the incoming worship associates? Thank you for agreeing to serve in this important role. We look forward to experiencing your contributions to our shared worship. May your service enrich and inspire you as you seek to help enrich and inspire us. Thank you. Wisdom words from Lisa Friedman. If you had but one wish, what would it be? Take your time thinking about it. So much is at stake. An end to all suffering, a stop to all violence, a solution to poverty and all of its ills. Would you wish for love, for forgiveness, or for healing? Would you wish the world joy or the wisdom to change? Would you wish to understand everything or to know less than you do? Take your time thinking about it. So much is at stake, for a wish is a thought, and a thought is an idea. An idea leads to commitment, and a commitment cries out for action. A wish can be a dangerous thing, something daring, and it need not be witnessed by the stars to come true. Let us be glad that we're not given just one wish in our life, but many. Let us be grateful not for wishful thinking, but for the discipline of thoughtful wishing that can lead to change. We are the breath of the ancestors. We are the results of their breathing and dreaming and living. We are the consequences of life's longing for itself. So much to us has been given. We lift our hearts this morning in grateful thanks for all the blessings that have been bestowed upon us. And we remember that with blessing comes responsibility. We are responsible. Responsible for sharing what we have so generously received. Responsible for loving, for reaching out, for embracing life. We are responsible for making this world a little bit better for our having lived. We are the breath of the ancestors. Let us always remember, and may we live into the dreams that they had for us. Amen, and blessed be.
Some of you might be familiar with the lifespan theory of Erik Erikson. According to Erikson, humans pass through 8 stages during their life, and at each stage have to negotiate a particular challenge. People who navigate a particular stage well are thought to also acquire a particular strength and to be better prepared for the next life challenge. Today I will focus on the 3 stages that cover the adulthood years. In early adulthood, the challenge for the individual is to develop intimacy in their relationships. To Erikson, this meant that a person had the capacity to commit him or herself to close affiliations and partnerships, and to abide by these commitments, even when they call for significant sacrifices and compromises. The danger of this stage was isolation. That is, individuals who did not make these commitments would experience isolation rather than intimacy. The personal strength that can be acquired at this stage is love. The next stage in the middle adult years was the stage that Erikson viewed as most central. According to Erikson, mature people need to be needed. The prime challenge at this stage is generativity, the concern in establishing and guiding the next generation. This involves both the provision of care and generating products or ideas that may benefit successive generations. The mere fact of having or wanting children does not achieve generativity, As the focus is on providing care and concern for later generations, including those who are not our kin. Erickson noted that many institutions in society, including religious ones, help promote the achievement of generativity. The danger in this stage is that the person may become self-focused and self-indulgent, and there is stagnation in the individual's development. The personal strength that can be acquired in this stage is care. The last stage, corresponding to the late adult years, is one in which the person may develop either ego integrity or despair. Erickson argued that only people who have taken care of others and who have adapted well to both the triumphs and disappointments of life will develop ego integrity. Ego integrity involves the acceptance of one's one and only life cycle as something that had to be. People who develop ego integrity also feel a sense of comradeship or sense of connection with other people, including those from other cultures or other times. For example, Erickson stated that a wise Indian, a true gentleman or gentlewoman, and a mature peasant would share and recognize in one another the state of ego integrity. The lack or loss of ego integrity can lead to despair and a fear of death. Despair arises if the person is not satisfied with his or her life and realizes the remaining life is too short to start over. The strength that emerges in this stage is wisdom. To me, Erickson's theory provides a framework for thinking about the idea of legacy. His emphasis on generativity, on concerns for future generations at midlife, rings true for me. As I was preparing for this service, I thought about the lives of my own parents and the legacies they have created. My mom was first a stay-at-home mom, then later moved into part-time and full-time employment. Part of her legacy is the fruits of her labor in her roles as both mother and grandmother. She provided care and support for her family, but she also had a broader personal mission. You see, I had a brother with cerebral palsy who was severely disabled. He eventually had to be placed in an institution because of the high level of care he needed, and he died at age 19. When my mother started working, she decided she wanted to work as a teacher's aide in a special education classroom. Although there were limits to what she had been able to do for her own son, she felt she could contribute to the welfare of other special needs children. Part of her personal legacy is the many ways in which she helped those children, who often were not the easiest children to love. My dad was fortunate in that he qualified for a pension in his mid-50s and was able to take early retirement. After many years of a successful career, which allowed him to support his family and make contributions at work, and the years he spent raising his own children, he needed to negotiate the transition to retirement. His new direction was to volunteer at a nonprofit agency where he has worked as an unpaid volunteer for about 20 years. Among other things, he has helped with the finances, managing investments for the agency, and chaired the board of a nonprofit. He also was a key person in developing a tax program that involved helping low-income people file their tax returns. Because of their low wages, they invariably qualified for a refund due to the earned income tax credit. So the program was about making sure that people got their full refunds. I have had a growing realization over the last few years of an inner need to feel that I am giving back to the world, and at least in some small way, making it a better place for future generations. I'm not sure yet what I will eventually see as my own legacy. There is a Chinese proverb: one generation plants the trees, the next generation gets the shade. Maybe part of the mystery of life is that we never really know the myriad ways in which we have influenced one another. We may especially not be aware of the small things we did, ways we helped others, that changed that person's life in some way. I do know that I am the kind of person who tends to become involved once I make a commitment. And one of my mantras is, any job worth doing is worth doing well. I would rather do less, but do it well. I can especially see this in my work life, where I focus less on how much I produce and more on the quality of what I produce. The Safford reading is a good reminder for me that I need to consistently bring that spirit to my home life, where it seems there is a never-ending series of demands calling for my attention, some of which are clearly not so important in the grand scheme of things. What have I attended to well and faithfully? What do I want to attend to in the coming decades? And will I ever have a complete and satisfying answer to these questions? Even if the answers are not completely clear, the questions may serve as a guide for the next few years.
So this month at church, we've been exploring themes related to legacies. And so far, we've been focused on what you might describe as meta-narratives of legacies, larger than our own personal lives. But today we bring it down to ourselves, to our personal lives. And so I wanted to ask you, when you think about legacy in personal terms, what do you think of? The things your grandfather taught you.
I think of things I've passed on to my children.
Things you've...
example I've made.
The legacy that other people have left on you who have been important to you.
Mm-hmm. I need to do today and tomorrow to secure future things for the future generations.
I think of recycling and the environment.
When I was 2 years old, my father was already missing in action, and yet every room except for the bathroom had artwork of his, mostly sculpture and huge oil paintings. Which two of them I brought with me to America.
Mm. Thank you. When I think about personal legacies, I think about all the people for whom I've had the honor of officiating memorial services. In 10 years, it's been almost 40 memorial services that I've officiated, and whenever I can, I meet with the family and the friends of the person who's died to learn more about their life. And at the end of that interview, I always ask, what is the legacy that person has left behind? I can only think of a couple of times in which a family struggled to answer that question. One time in particular in which a family struggled, the woman who died, her husband had died 10 or 15 years before her, and she never really recovered from that loss. After her husband died, she just sort of turned in on herself by degrees, shutting the world out. And that would be an example of what Kathy described as stagnation. She couldn't find a way to live through that loss. And so her family struggled to talk about what her legacy was in the later years of her life. But most of the time, the vast majority of the time, when I ask about legacy, the family has lots to say. They talk about the ways in which the person was as a parent or as a grandparent or an aunt and an uncle. They talk about their familial relationships and the legacy that they've left in their familial relationships. They often talk about their work life and their professional contributions. And then generally there's a third area, and that might be their church. I've met many people who talked about the impact that the person had on their church or some other organization. I remember one woman who, after her own children were grown, she devoted her attention to the Girl Scouts. And she left a huge legacy in the Girl Scouts of America. Another man whose legacy was his involvement as a sponsor for countless men in AA over many, many years. And so I think about these people and all of the ways in which they hand down the gifts of their life to the next generation. And I believe that we all will leave a legacy when we're gone. And part of the question for us, when we stop to consider it, is what that legacy will be. Some people, when they think about this question, are first drawn to their work lives and the contributions that they've made in their professional fields. For some people, these may be very important. However, not everyone has the opportunity to make a mark in a profession, and even those who do, if they're fortunate, will have the opportunity to retire someday. And then what? Unfortunately, our society doesn't always lift up a positive view of aging. And so I want to remind ourselves for just a moment about what the larger culture tells us about older adulthood. What does the culture tell us about older adulthood? Avoid it at all costs. What else does it tell us?
Drive too slow.
That it's painful. That it's no fun. That it's not pretty.
I think it's a wonderful time of life.
I'm with you, Jane, but we're trying to focus on the stereotypes for a minute. But I think we've made our point. And I think Jane offers the corrective to the stereotypes of the culture provides us, the negative view of aging. I don't agree with it, and I know many of you don't either. Here in this congregation, I'm blessed to have relationships with adults who model what healthy aging looks like and who demonstrate with their life choices that the years following after 50 can be an incredibly generative time. In recent years, there's been a spate of books written for adults exploring what it means to age well between midlife and older age. One author refers to the years between 50 and 75 as the third chapter. Another describes that stage of life as the third act. Still another dubs those years the encore years. Marjorie Zoet Bankson, in her little book, Creative Aging, writes that we may be in our third round of call, anywhere between the ages of 50 all the way up to 80. She describes the time preceding and following the traditional retirement age as a chance to choose all over again. Her book is designed as a guide to help with that discernment process. She encourages people to really take their time, to take a complete inventory of needs, of abilities, and gifts. She acknowledges that our physical health and our financial situation are important factors, as are real needs for slowing down the pace of activity. These are all factors, she writes, but they are not determinants. No matter the limitations a person may face, there are always options. The key is to explore those options and to find ways to make a meaningful and satisfying contribution to someone or something beyond our own lives. In his book called Aging Well, the medical doctor and researcher George Vallant offers a wealth of insights drawn from one of the longest studies on aging ever conducted, called the Study of Adult Development at Harvard University. This study began all the way back in 1939, and it's been conducted continuously ever since. Three separate groups of 824 women and men have been extensively interviewed and surveyed on a regular schedule, beginning with their young adulthood. In addition to lifting up life choices that contribute to unhealthy aging, including smoking cigarettes and abusing alcohol, this study highlights factors which clearly contribute to healthy aging, including exercise and the capacity for forgiveness and gratitude. The study highlights the importance of remaining actively engaged in and curious about life. In response to the question, what is the most important thing that makes you want to get out of bed in the morning? An 84-year-old study member answered, I live to work, to learn something new every day that I didn't know yesterday, and to enjoy the precious moments with my wife. This response underscores some of the most important observations of the study. To age well, we need to learn how to continue to play and create in our mature years. We also need satisfying relationships. In fact, the study suggests that cultivating the ability to develop relationships with younger people as we lose older ones is more important to enjoyment in later life than retirement income. Relationships across the generations are vitally important, and there are not many places outside of families where we have the opportunity to cultivate them. Here at church, we do. Younger people and older people have a chance to really get to know each other, to learn from each other, and to grow together. The fruits of those relationships can be abundant blessing. We know from our own experience that such relationships are enriching. The study suggests that they're also good for our health. Promoting and encouraging health is a big part of what we're about here. Practicing living in beloved community is about that. Learning to extend the bounds of beloved community ever wider is about that. Spiritual growth is part of that, so is purposeful living. Always, at every stage of life, there are choices to be made. We may think regularly about how the choices we're making impact us and the people close to us, but life is about more than us, And as we age, we may find ourselves drawn more and more to considering the wider impact of our choices. All of us will leave some kind of legacy. Perhaps part of what it takes to age well is to keep finding ways to spend our one wild and precious life in ways that create blessing. For all of us, may it be so. So, legacy is something that we have been thinking about as a church community, and particularly the legacy that we as a church community will leave future generations. Even though this congregation has been in existence for well over 140 years, we don't really have an endowment. And so we've decided that now is the time to change that, and that we'll be the generation that helps leave an endowment legacy for future generations. And so last week, you had in your order of service a brochure called Simple Gifts. It's a program for everyday giving to the endowment of small gifts on an ongoing basis that we hope that you'll participate in. Today, you have a brochure called the Heritage Program. This is a planned giving program for those of you who feel that you may have assets that you can consider leaving to the church when your life has come to an end. And so I encourage you to consider the Heritage Program and the ways that you might want to remember the church in your will, in insurance policies that you have, or in many other ways, and there are a whole host of descriptions in here. If you're interested in talking to someone on the Legacy Committee, please call the office and let us know, and we'll be glad to pay you a visit. I send you with these words from Edward Everett Hale. I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. May it be so for all of us. Go in peace.